cult. Like many cults, the Seventh-day Adventist Church lured my parents in at their most vulnerable. They asked for tithe and commitment, and my parents made a contract with the worst of them. My dad in Brooklyn, impressed by the soup kitchen and the kindness of people in this cold-ass, fucked-up experiment of a country, and my mom presumably falling in love with my dad's warmth, impeccable style, and fancy beige embroidery. Sorcerer shit. And the fact that she, too, could be out on these recently acceptable, fancy-ass, 1990 desegregated streets, driving at night with an African resplendent boy who smiled at her and had a boss-ass accent. My dad found the church, and she found him. Well, she found his sister. Together with another Canadian witch, they formed a tiny little family of good girls. But if you've ever seen The Craft, you know that the fourth is the one with the real power, and the fourth had the natural gifts. And well, these three never made it that far. My mom ended up studying with and living with my aunt and this other woman. I don't know if she truly ever fit in with them. She did, however, take a trip to Brooklyn and meet some of my auntie's family. And that, just like how Peter Parker got bit by that spider, or Wonder Woman left their island, or Jughead ate a million cheeseburgers, is part of my origin story. My mom, Greek goddess, what did Sweetie say? Pretty in the face? Itty bitty waist? Came to Brooklyn. And my dad was the most outstanding dude. They bonded or whatever. And she got pregnant and her life changed forever. Her mom was like, bitch, no. Did you forget about the existence of abortions? And her sister was like, I'll save you, sweetie. And so my mom moved in with her. Alas, though, that was a fated decision also. So shoutouts to being adopted by society, bitches. That old money baby, because she had some several thousand dollars, and she used it to pull all the courage out of her butthole and drive her little pickup truck into a new apartment, which was undoubtedly lonely as fuck, so she bought a black cat with white paws as a little familiar to me only, not her, because remember, she's not a witch. But the landlord said, declaw it, and she did. And then she was able at last, for one moment in her life, to exhale into the beginning of her new, grown up, growing a baby, pregnant, mommy-to-be, multiracial daughter-having, mom of the 90s. Racism, it's the worst. Like all the movies about multiraciality, when I was very young, I was not black or white, I was just a happy baby. I had a white mom and a black dad who was from a cool island. My consciousness developed more, and I wanted to swim all the time and read books and look pretty. As soon as I learned about inflection or body language, that shit went out the window. To explain again, as I beautifully described my Brooklyn views previously, I spent a lot of time there as a little girl. I also spent a lot of time in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, which was highly mixed up ethnically too. LOL, they're fucking missionaries, y'all. They go to Borneo and shit. And that was it. Like most cults, Seventh Days thrive on having their people isolated from the outside world. And I'm sure it was due in part to their age, youthful, and in part to their vulnerability, immigrant, orphan, and in part to their entering the ages of impoverished young adults. They took it really, truly seriously. No liquor, no sex, no meat. For my dad, my mom ate chicken and beef, and sometimes and cheese too. I'm really trying to paint a sort of austere picture here that would show you how the world outside of Seventh-day Adventists did not exist. Not for my parents, not for my home, and not for me. Seventh-day doctrine comes from a prophet named Ellen G. White who had visions after a massive head injury. I won't get into the history because that's all available online. I want to paint for you a picture of what it is to be a child in an environment like that. It was living in a state of almost constant fear, guilt, and determination. You see, Seventh-day Adventist children must be ready to answer the call. When martial law is declared and the soldiers come to your door asking, do you believe in God, the one true God, that Sabbath is on Saturday? You must answer, yes, defiantly, even though it means separation from your family, even though it may mean death, you do not deny the Lord. Since it was the 90s and I didn't live in Gaza, Burma, or Rwanda, it may have been hard for me to imagine what that was like. So we studied the Holocaust at great length. I can't remember titles here, but there's one book where a girl's hair gets caught in a mill machine and rips off half of her scalp. There's a movie where a woman is passing through a line at camp and has the Bible in her hand. With her hand up, and the guard miraculously looks away, so she escapes with the word of God. Obviously, the play version of Anne Frank. We learned persecution. We learned how different we were from the worldly outside world and the Sunday keepers. We learned how the devil comes in a disguise to tempt you. And we learned that when Christ was ready for the rapture to save us all, even if we were dead, we would rise up from our graves and ascend into heaven with him, leaving behind the non-believers.
They kill me. No.
They might have had me if they had any respect for women at all. I mean, at all. If one single woman was a minister and I had an image to grow into. But mercifully, that was not the case. The closest friend to that I had was a woman I met at camp meeting 1 year. The two-week outdoor gathering of Adventists in Lancaster, Massachusetts. She was in her 70s and was a missionary who had traveled, with her husband of course, all around the world. Somewhere exists a picture of 8-year-old Vanessa and this woman smiling widely. Alas, a few choice experiences with freedom of speech and censorship would change it all. Yes, Harry Potter helped free me from this hell and left me to stand alone in the cold world of harsh reality that existed outside the Adventist bubble of devotion and doom. But first, an education. Our school was in the basement of the church and consisted of two classrooms with two teachers. Classroom 1 was for grades 1 through 5, and classroom 2 was for grades 6 through 12. LMFAO, can you fucking imagine? I feel like Kimmy Schmidt. Shoutouts to Titus Andromedon. Okay, so it was cruel and not school. Other than memorizing Bible verses and singing Christmas songs, we ain't do shit. And I had not enough money to buy the school uniform, Scottish designed skirts, and navy, red, or white shirts, or vests, or khaki pants. My parents would have to beg and borrow to get the cash to go to Sears to get me some clothes, but even though the outfits were ugly as sin, and I just now realized the colors of the American flag, fucking barf, I was hyped to go to a mall in the 90s, boy. I was fucking hyped. I was so excited, y'all. Like, yes, please. Picking up my boring-ass red t-shirts and sexy little Scottish shirts. If you think it's interesting that I said sexy, I'll remind you that I was like 6. I was just traumatized and abused and shit. Don't fucking agree, pedos. I was happy. It got me away from the church and the house, and that's all it took, honey. The worldly devilish forces are strong, and I knew I wanted to taste the outside world. ... Thank you very much. Going to Sears was a mini vacation and my tiny mind was alight. I was so excited for the bright lights, the shirts with tigers and sequins, the jewelry shelf, and Claire's. I wanted to live in Claire's. I wanted hair ties and scrunchies and slap bracelets and unicorn hologram rabbit fur crowns. I wanted wands. I wanted eyeshadow. I wanted earrings. I wanted, before this fantasy gets out of hand, I should say that malls in the 90s were lit as a general rule. Yes, I was sheltered, but come on, y'all. This is when Joe Exotic was bringing real-life tigers and lions and bears, oh my, to malls across America. This shit was fucking popping, and I loved it. Carrying on. Do you think I got my fucking rabbit fur? If you do, you haven't been paying attention, because we were poor as shit. Your ass only in money and wisdom, we was rich, ow. And we didn't have no fucking Claire's money. Not to mention, hello, jewelry was banned. Makeup was censored. Ain't no way I could get any of that stuff regardless. Looking back, though, I realized recently we didn't have to be so poor. Every week, though, our parents tithed a percentage of their check to the church, in addition to paying thousands of dollars in tuition every semester it was elementary school, so that their children could receive a quote-unquote Christian education. It's somewhat devastating to think of all the times we went without heat and went hungry, only to not learn science or history. It's sad for my parents too, but it's very sad for the children who endured. Grades. My first day of first grade in the basement, I showed up with a brand new beautiful pencil case and pen zipper bag, new notebooks, new backpack, new composition book, all this beautiful new scholarly stuff. When I started unpacking at my desk, the other like 10 students or whatever thought I was weird as hell and outlandish and rich. So I was introduced to shame for having nice things. It was a weird feeling because in my opinion and perspective, I was poor and uncomfortable, but they thought I was weird and rich. Looking back, the whole so-called half black, half white thing was probably where more of the glances were coming from. Back then, they had a word for us. Not mutt. Mulatto. It's a word that comes through the enslavement and colonization during the Caribbean era of the triangle trade, because a mule is a crossbreed of a donkey and a horse, and a mulatto woman was a crossbreed between white rapists and black women who were enslaved. Yep, mulatto. The power of three. The third daughter of the failed coven Song is the daughter of my aunt, the one who undoubtedly brought them all together as black women are wont to do. My auntie, the person who she fell in love with and became impregnated by, was also a handsome foreigner. He was Polish. I say that because this coven of daughters, these Worcester to Brooklyn baddies, aka Wartown gals, is that a good coven name? Good acronym? WTG? Yes, it's good. So the Wartown gals were clearly baddies of their time. They each had multiracial children born not far apart from one another. My aunt gave birth first to a beautiful baby boy. Then she had her daughter Song, who was a few months older than me. Then I was born. Then Fall, daughter to my uncle the boxer and her mother the Canadian. My aunt had Batty, determined black woman that she is, stayed up in Eddy City and was raising her kids in Worcester, Webster, and all them cool ass cities where actual people lived. The Canadian and my mom relocated to the tiny town of my mom's adopted family, where my mom lived in quiet anonymity as a scorned heiress, patiently surviving and working and awaiting the day she would have the money to buy a house and be free. Back at church school, my cousin was in my class. I'm not going to get into that freak show. I'll give my fellow SDA survivors their privacy, for now, at least with a few exceptions.
Thanks for tuning in.